So, in conclusion to your second question, Christian, I think we can say that these lectures have reinforced the ideas that borders are far from only human-made divisions, that they are deeply connected to all kinds of ecological processes, political economies, and material realities.
Bienvenue dans le podcast vidéo On Air, the podcast series of the University of the Greater Region Center for Border Studies.
Hello everyone, welcome you to today's session of Border Realities. My name is Christian Willen. I'm a researcher in Border Studies at the University of Luxembourg and I work for the UniGera Center for Border Studies. Today's session is a special one, really a very special one, as we will hear and we will discuss some of the conclusions of an lecture series, of an interdisciplinary lecture series that started last year in October. And I'm talking about the Border Realities lecture series, which has been regularly organized by the UniGera Center for Border Studies for some years now. And our aim with this lecture series is to take current topics from the academic debate and to discuss them with an international, with a very broad and interdisciplinary audience. And for this reason, the lecture series is not only held online, but also with an international partner every year, an international partner that we change every year. And this year we had really the great pleasure of working with the University of Grenoble-Alpes, more precisely with Anne-Laure Amelazari, to discuss borders this year from a post-human perspective. And we are about to find out exactly what it means in a second and what results we achieved and so on. But first, on behalf of the UniGera Center for Border Studies, first, I would like to thank the two academic chairs of the lecture series, not only for the excellent program, but especially for your choice of topic, because I think that borders will be discussed and must be discussed much more in the future from this perspective, from the perspective of non-human actors, from biological issue perspective, climate change, nature conservation, etc., etc. And I would like to thank, first of all, Lola Aubry as one of the academic chairs. Lola is a postdoctoral researcher at the UniGera Center for Border Studies at the University of Luxembourg. She has a strong interdisciplinary background in political studies and specialization in ethnographic approaches to the political and to the spatial. And in her research, she delved into the question how civil society actors engage with, resist, and reshaped borders. And in this research, in this ethnographical research, Lola worked with the concept of entanglements, and she worked in a new materialism perspective, which led her to develop a really strong interest in non-human agencies in ordering processes. And this is a research strand she is currently developing. And most recently, Lola co-edited a book, the book Resituating Crisis, a book which explores crisis and discourses on crisis from a critical ethnographic perspective too. But many thanks also to Anne-Laure Amelazari. She is a political geographer with a focus on border studies, and she's full professor at the University of Grenoble-Alpes. She has led many comparative analyses of border dynamics in Latin America and Europe and so on. And she coined the well-known term mobile borders. Anne-Laure works at the intersection of space and art in border contexts, in different border contexts, and she co-founded the collective Anti-Atlas of Borders, which is a project, a science art project that brings together researchers, artists, experts, border residents too. And in her last book about border culture, which was co-edited with Victor Conrad, in her last book, Anne-Laure started exploring this nexus, this border-nature nexus. So So thank you to both of you, Lola and Anne-Laure, for your investment and for really bringing a very important topic from my point of view, a very important topic in border studies to the forefront. Yeah. Thank you again.
So we want to thank you, Christian, and the UNIGR CBS for trusting us with the organization of these the cycle of lectures, the 2024-2025 season of border realities, which is a successful border lecture cycle that has been ongoing for a few years now and is always at the forefront of research.
Yes, thank you very much, Christian, and also thank you to Denise Rodriguez Marafona for the help with the communication and the organization of all the logistics of border realities.
Yes, also from my side, Denise, thank you very much for your very important work. All these issues, all these conditions, technical conditions you are managing for this lecture series. Okay, thank you. I'm very delighted to be moderating today's final session of border realities and to learn more about why Lola and Anne-Laure, why did you choose this topic on nature cultural divide? What are your takeaways, for example, from this lecture series and much more? But I would like to start with the first question. Why did you decide to take a post-human perspective on borders?
Thank you for this question, Christian. There are a few things that and elements that we need to contextualize to explain our choice. First, the events, the context, and starting with the COVID crisis. Then what we felt was a paradigm shift in social sciences, and especially this the end of this nature-culture divide or partake that has been characteristic of the modern period. And the third point is also that this lecture series comes to life following the meeting of my previous research and Lola's. So first and foremost, and I think it's maybe the most simple way to catch the importance of the topic, maybe start with the COVID-19 pandemic. 2020 is already passed, but it's very memorably printed in our minds. And as the virus spread across the world, governments responded with a variety of border restrictions, closing international frontiers, limiting movement, even confining people to their homes and multiplying borders within society. We even saw marks being put on the sidewalk to provide borders for homeless people, for example. And all border scholars jumped onto it, and many interesting things were published. And we also realized that the people who could actually most easily enclose themselves into a safe place were the ones who, in the period before the pandemic, were the ones who most easily traveled. So all those studies worked on borders, tackled borders, but always mainly from the point of view of the state, looking at how states manage mobility, containment, and how actors decided finally human actors decided to use borders to order the planet that had gone totally and that had been totally unsettled by the arrival of a new virus. So most of these discussions we noticed with Lola remained within the very traditional framework, treating borders as artificial lines between nations. And indeed, it appeared as an efficient tool for governments to show they were reacting and to enhance the spectacularization of borders in a different context. However, from our perspective, I think the virus did not simply cross borders. It did challenge the very idea of borders as purely human construct. One of the very common metaphors when one tackles borders is to compare a border to the skin. But we saw with the arrival of this COVID-19 virus that there were many germs, viruses, and the kind that we're actually living within our body. We don't know if our stomach is a world of itself. Does it belong to us or to all the living entities that are part of it? And then the membranes of our body appear as different kinds of borders with special balances of flows and everything. So we see that there is a shift that is both symbolical and very and semantic about what a border means. And at the time of the pandemic, there was a small paper written by someone called Tobias Rees, who proposed to speak to qualify our ear not as an Anthropocene, but as a microbiocene. What Anthropocene and microbiocene have in common is to challenge scalar and multiscalar perception of space. And I think this for geographers and social sciences is a very central issue. And in both these anthropocenic or microbiocenic modes, the notion of partition and the notion of borders is totally shaken. So the pandemic, I think, showed us that borders are also biological and ecological realities shaped by interactions between humans, non-humans, non-humans being viruses, animals, ecosystems, and you name it, very numerous around us. This observation that we started discussing with Lola led us to broader reflections on the relationship between borders and the natural world, or what is called in the binary distinction, the natural world.
Yes, and also, and it's related to the COVID, what is a very big motivation for this lecture series is the Anthropocene itself, because with environmental crisis, climate change, and biodiversity loss, we are reminded that human societies are actually very deeply entangled with non-human worlds. And in this context, we find that it's crucial to rethink borders, not as just human-made. And we think that adopting this more than human perspective actually allows us to imagine alternative ways of managing mobility, territory, and governance that will be maybe more just and sustainable in the future. And in fact, in addition to this event or context that motivated the series, it is also a more general paradigm shift in the social sciences, so the end of this nature-cultural divide that motivated us. For a long time in Western thought and the social sciences, it has been structured around this strict separation between nature and culture. Nature has traditionally been seen as this external reality governed by universal laws and something that humans dominated, while culture was perceived as the domain of language, symbols, and institutions. And today, this great divide has been increasingly challenged, so by current events, as we've seen, but also by ongoing works and previous works in anthropology, in the philosophy of sciences. So among the most popular work in relation to this great divide is, for instance, Philippe Descola's work and Bruno Latour's work. So in Beyond Nature and Culture, Philippe Descola highlights that there is a diversity of ways in which world societies relate to the non-human world, showing that this nature-culture distinction is a specific construct of Western thought rather than something that is universally shared. And similarly, in We Have Never Been Modern, Latour argues that Western modernity has been built on this illusion of a world in which nature exists independently of human activities, whereas in reality, nature and culture are constantly intertwined in everything we do.
This reconsideration of the nature-culture divide or partake has profound implications on how we understand, frame borders from a perspective of science, but also from a perspective of representation in general. Amitav Ghosh, who's a writer and has written a book called The Great Derangement, where he asks, why is there not more fiction about climate change? And his first take is that literature, as it has been developed in the mostly Western, but not in the mostly Western context, in the modern period, has no words for what is happening. So Our challenge is huge, and this is why we decided to make to open a debate with all our invitees to find the words, find the concepts, and find a new way of thinking of speciality and of the role of borders within speciality. Because if we abandon the idea that territories are solely cultural and political constructions, then we must recognize that borders are also shaped by a series of different dynamics, material, geographical, ecological, may them be climate change, soil erosion, ecosystem transformation. They can no longer be regarded as mere context. They actively participate in shaping the way societies define themselves and organize their spaces. Therefore, the collapse of what we called the nature culture divide marks a major shift in the social sciences, which should, in our point, according to us, no longer take these categories for granted. And this paves the way for new interdisciplinary approaches in which the study of human societies can no longer be separated from the material, environmental, and technological dynamics that shape them. So we came to the building of this framework from our previous research and the dialogue that we created between both our points of view. So I had worked on the relationship to nature and the way it shapes border. In a book chapter, I defined three steps of this relationship between nature as something still bounded and different from culture. So three steps in which, in three modes of framing of relationship between nature and borders. I showed how in the history of border making, borders at first, nature had first, been a tool to divide territories because of this, the dogma of natural borders, and then how more recently nature became a motivation for a more collaborative mode, and nature could be considered as the reason for collaborating on borders. And I had arrived when I finished this first text 10 years ago on the idea that we were arriving in a third moment characterized by panicking nature, that natural processes were crossing borders without foretelling anything. We would be them invasive plants, tornadoes, or whatever. The versatile condition of climate was increasing this. And what I was heading to was the fact that if we didn't think of ways to frame better our relationship with nature, this panicking state would lead us to renaturalizing borders and to a new dividing trend. And this is exactly what happened with COVID. So when I met Lola and we started discussing, and we started challenging the end of the nature-culture divide, we started to think that it could be interesting to question what borders would look like in another step, which we could call after nature. After nature is not that nature doesn't exist anymore, or that natural elements do not exist, but that we work in a direction which goes over this binary division, and we take into account the ontological turn, the new materialism, and Lola at the time was starting to develop her project on animal and borders, and we engaged together in this conversation.
And I was not initially in border studies focusing on nature. I came to this theme through my previous research on the, as Anne-Laure mentioned, this ontological turn and new materialism during my PhD. The thing is, my PhD was anthropocentric in its empirical focus. It examined resistance to borders in the context of Paris. But even then, theoretically, I was engaging with this new materialism in one core concept of this current is non-human agency. And so non-human agency emphasizes that our action and our capacity to act as humans are always already mediated by non-humans. And so I have integrated this perspective into my analysis of resistance practices at the time. And through this engagement, I also worked with the idea of the existence of many different yet entangled bordered and bordering worlds, which is inspired by the ontological turn, which is also key in understanding this questioning of the nature-culture divide. And I've examined how the different bordered worlds relate and become with each other. And so there were different avenues that that emerged following the PhD. So how do we think about borders in the world of multiple ontologies after the nature-cultural divide and beyond the human? And since my postdoc in 2023, I've been pursuing this line of inquiry much more deeply. So we've in collaboration with Anne-Laure and also other colleagues. And now I have the opportunity to pursue this work in greater empirical depth and return on the field with my own funded projects on non-humans and borders. But I will talk about this a bit later.
Yes, yes, I think we should come back to this. Because I would indeed, I would like to learn more about your project that you're talking about. Now I will come back to border realities. In the lecture series since October, we have listened to different talks, so six talks, each talk dealing with another aspect or with different aspects of post-human borders. And from your point of view, looking back today, what specific contributions these talks made, and to what extent did they completed each other? What do you think? Do you see kind of big picture as an outcome, a general outcome of the lecture series?
I would say that we think that the lecture series has been a key in complexifying how borders relate to nature, and a key takeaway I see is that nature is at the heart of power relations at borders. So with this series of lecture, we've seen how natural elements such as jungles, rivers, landscapes are either instrumentalized to justify exclusion, surveillance, and even abandonment. And also how nature is an active part of bordering and debordering processes. So we have, for instance, the lecture of Marie-Lou Saru on the Darien jungle, so the so-called natural border between Colombia and Panama. And she showed us this jungle framed as an impassable obstacle that's reinforced the idea that migration through it is illegitimate. But however, she insisted on how this framing is also deeply political, and that raises ethical questions about how nature is used as a justification for inaction or selective intervention, and question about how borders are naturalized for othering purposes. And her presentation also sadly echoes a current event today with the rise of this form of new neo-fascism, where immigrants are also assimilated to animals and naturalized for the sake of legitimizing exclusion and inhumane treatment. And we also had Xavier Oliveira Gonzalez lecture. Here, nature was shown not as a backdrop to human activities at borders, but rather as something that plays an active role in shaping migration, governance, and territorial control. His work on the Rio Grande, so the river between US and Mexico, explores how nature can simultaneously be an obstacle and an enabler in border making, border resistance, and border crossing. And this river is not presented just as a geographical feature, it is presented as actively participating in bordering processes. Its currents can be deadly, its vegetation can offer cover, and its waters, they create both physical and emotional barriers. So his analysis really challenges the idea that borders are purely human construct, and showing instead how they emerge from complex interactions between humans and non-human actors. And on this, this idea that nature is at the heart of power relation, we also had the Mette Svensson lecture on pigs and borders in the context of Denmark. And she showed that the construction of the Danish nation is not only about culture, but also deeply tied to nature. And she does that by investigating this unexpected actor, which is the pig. And in so doing, she reveals how biological, spatial, and genomic border making are intertwined. They all participate to filtering and othering for the nation. So, for instance, she demonstrated the relationship between, on the one hand, the placement of undesirable migrants in geographic border zone to safeguard the Danish welfare state. If I remember well, she used the example of Lindholm Island. And on the other hand, she refers to the construction of the fence at Denmark external borders against wild pigs of non-Danish origin aimed at protecting the Danish pig genome. So Meter showed that these two instances, they relate in that they illustrate a common logic of nation making and belonging, where animal and human stories, they intertwine, and where different kinds of bordering serves to define and protect what is considered desirable, what is valued for the Danish society.
Lola just pointed out to the first conclusion of those lectures that the fact that the power relation, that nature is at the heart of power relations, and especially around that nature appears very close to the definition of notions that we think are human, like the state or the nation. The second learning that we gathered from these lectures is the fact that they allowed to rethink borders through an enlarged political ecology. And to us, there is an important takeaway in the need to reconsider border through this lens. We think that borders are not only defined, should not only be defined by legal or political decisions, that they are also shaped by land, labor, and environmental factors. And from that perspective, we had two quite different but very complementary lectures. The first that opened the cycle was Timothy Raymaker's. His research shows how agricultural production, land use, labor conditions participate to bordering, and how this bordering is embedded in global supply chains, determining who can work, where the resources can be extracted, and how the territories are controlled. He starts from the land in Italy, where tomatoes are grown, from the hands and bodies that shape the land, and these belong to mostly people without paper, illegalized migrants. He shows how this their production is then used in within a very global food supply chains and business. And this approach actually challenges traditional understandings of territoriality by highlighting both the ecological and the economic forces which are behind border making and border enforcement. So again, there's a very very specific and very complex notion of what scalarity means in this work. And Sylvain Guyot came to the debate from the perspective of conservation and ecological reserves, and he contributed to the discussion by introducing a concept that he has been shaping, which is that of eco-frontier. His work indeed traces how, over centuries, nature itself has been territorialized through conservation policies, land appropriation, and environmental governance. He showed how environmental discourse can sometimes justify new forms of territorial control and exclusions. This is what he calls eco-conquest. And he showed how, in these cases, conservation efforts are entangled with power struggles over land and resources. So this the importance of political ecology to understand border dynamics was our second important result. And the third one opens up a whole field of knowledge and research from our point of view. It's the need for new methods in border studies. I already mentioned Amitav Ghosh's Great Derangement and the quest for new narrative forms to address climate change. And Amitav Ghosh says that maybe we don't have the language, and maybe this is why it's interesting that at the moment of climate change and through the circulation of images in new media, we give new importance to visual forms. And that was something that Juliette Fall worked upon. She hinted at this issue with the need of new methods in this context of the end of the nature-culture divide. For those who were there, you will remember that Juliette edited a comic book that comes from slow research that she initiated justly during the COVID crisis, about putting herself, her body, her sensible experience at the border. And she highlighted the importance of embodied methods, notably drawing, in understanding border dynamics. And she presented to us a very, very interesting long-term research on how people physically experience and navigate border, emphasizing the ways in which their bodies interact with landscapes, with infrastructures, with political systems. And she showed how by paying attention to the lived experience, she could produce a more nuanced and situated understanding of borders. And she called it a messy, muddy, and multiple approach of borders that was very much entwined with nature. So in conclusion to your second question, Christian, I think we can say that these lectures have reinforced the ideas that borders are far from only human-made divisions, that they are deeply connected to all kinds of ecological processes, political economies, and material realities.
Thank you. Thank you for this conclusion, and thank you, Anne-Laure and Lola, for this very inspiring overview of the different talks you listened to. And I think the contribution made by all speakers of every lecture, these contributions are a very good basis to further exploring the topic, further deepening the topic. And it's in this context that I would like to know from you, Lola and Anne-Laure, to what extent did you find the lecture series stimulating for your own research?
Yes, thank you for your question. In fact, the organization of this lecture series is part of a research dynamic ongoing between the two of us. I think it's maybe 2023, and it has led us to write this coming article that echoes what has been discussed here in the lecture series. And in this article, we explore geopolitical borders and bordering after nature. So in this context where the nature-culture binary is increasingly challenged, as we mentioned before, and we discuss these theoretical, analytical, and methodological consequences of this shift. And one of the key theoretical contribution of the paper is that we revisit Chris Rumford multi-perspectival border studies agendas with the post-humanities. So Rumford multi-perspectival agenda already dates back to 2012, and it consists of three main ideas: that the state is far from being the only border maker. The second idea is that more and more actors are involved in bordering, notably from below, and this engage a process of democratization in bordering, and these actors are called border workers. And then the third idea is that while some borders are more visible than others, it is essential to understand less visible ones. And so in the theory section of our paper, we bring this agenda into conversation with existing work on non-human borders, as well as with the ontological turn, and notably with the idea of the pluriverse and how it challenges this idea of multi-perspectivism. So the concept of the pluriverse challenged the still dominant assumption that there is one world, one nature, and multiple cultures, but rather that there are many natures, or rather many multiple nature cultures that are related, that are entangled. And it recognized that there are many worlds, or as many worlds as living beings, so many ontologies, and that these worlds are entangled and responsible for one another in different ways. So what we do in our paper is that we go through each argument of Rumford's agenda in light of this new literature and this concept of the pluriverse, and we can maybe go through each of them briefly.
Yeah, so the first argument that Chris Rumford made, and that was very remarkable at the time he was writing, was that the state was not the only border maker. And he argued that there were many more creators of borders, and inducing border researchers to go beyond methodological nationalism. The result of Rumford's invitation was to enlarge the scope of actors, but at the time they remained mainly humans. Putting this into the post-human turn implies to consider that they can be many more border makers and actors that are not only human. So some of the lecturers discuss this more or less directly, like Javier's or Meta's. We can see an example of this argument as the melting of glaciers today has already necessitated the redefinition of borders in some mountain regions, notably between Italy and Switzerland, Italy and Austria. And this is a direct intervention of glaciers into border making processes, as I worked upon them already. So non-humans, we contend, can be shown to play an active role in shaping mobility, control, and territoriality. This is the first point.
Yes, and the second point I mentioned earlier is that we need to take into account that more actors, including those from below, are participating in the processes of bordering, leading to its democratization. And so with the post-human turn in border studies, we see that rivers, animals, ecosystems, they resist, they enable, they transform bordering practices in ways that are often overlooked. But however, the relationality that underpins post-humanism, while it extends border agentivity to non-humans, also renders the idea of democratization present in Rumford's agenda somehow obsolete. Rather, we need to recognize that all humans and non-humans are and have always already been part of or entangled in the processes of bordering and debordering, sometimes more or less visibly and always differently. And methodologically, since bordering happens through a variety of practices far and close to borderlands and at various scales, we cannot always know in advance where non-humans are influential or agentic in bordering. So that means that we need to find ways to thicken these entanglements between humans and non-humans in the many bordering and debordering practices and processes that we study. So we need to ask ourselves how are humans and non-human ontologies and their related territorialities mutually constitutive? Are they in competition, ignoring, harming, reinforcing, or enabling each other? How do they become with each other? And how are more than human ways of bordering and being bordered relating? And in that aspect, what we found is really important is that we need to rethink what we understand by visibility and perspective, and this relate to the third element of the Rumford agenda that we discussed in the theory section of our paper.
Rumford argued, and this goes with the idea of the democratization, that Rumford argues that some borders are indeed more visible than others, and understanding that which are less visible is indeed crucial, not only just run into which seems most evident. So this is what researchers usually try to do. But if we incorporate the non-human and this notion of entanglements, we challenge the very notion of visibility itself. Many borders, if we think of it, are invisible, not because they do not exist, but because they operate through non-human modes of sensing. Animals create territories through sounds, smells, markers that humans may not perceive. And these non-human borders often overlap with human-defined borders, leading to conflict, negotiation, or in the better cases, coexistence. So in the paper, we argue that a truly multi-perspectival approach to border studies should push the limits of what we perceive and know about borders. And we claim that we should really ask ourselves, how could we decenter and decolonize sensation and perception of borders and borderings with non-humans? So this requires an open, a new understanding of methodologies that would make us more attentive to those non-human ways of sensing and existing in the world. As a result, the paper also adds an ethical discussion to this, an ethical dimension, and discussion to this revised multi-perspectival agenda.
I think to finish today's session, I have a last question. It is a very classical question, the question, what comes next? So what are your projects, Lola and Anne-Laure, your projects, future projects related to the post-human border perspective?
So as you can see, we have answered questions, but opened so many more. So yes, there are many projects. The first one is an edited volume on that theme, following the success of the lecture series, or at least we found them successful, and we hope you did too. We are now working on an edited book that will bring together the researchers who participated in these discussions, along with additional scholars whose work resonates with this theme. So don't hesitate to come to us if you think you belong there and you would like to make a proposal. It would be an opportunity for us to develop the perspectives that we have engaged with, providing a more comprehensive and interdisciplinary exploration of the topic. We will follow on in parallel to the book. We plan to invite additional contributors to the book to present their chapter in a symposium or a continuation of lecture series at PACT and in a hybrid or fully online format. Because, for that matter, we have the pleasure to announce today very officially that Lola is coming to PAC next year because she won a very, very competitive scholarship.
Yes, I'm happy to announce that I will be joining PACT for 2 years with the Marie Curie Fellowship to develop my project that is called Border Whale. So I'll be leaving Luxembourg for Grenoble. And this research links directly to the themes that we have explored in the lecture series and aims to bring border studies into further conversation with post-humanist and human approaches. And as its name explicitly indicates, Border Whale seeks to explore how whales influence bordering and debordering politics. I will examine how well, human entanglements, so shared history, ecological independencies, political interactions shape geopolitical borders and bordering. And in the medium term, I will focus on two main contexts, the Mediterranean and the post-colonial North, and on both the hunt and the protection of the whale. And for the same topic, I will also continue to explore what are the challenges in researching non-human agency in border studies, what methodologies are particularly useful, what new kinds of data do we need to fully integrate and visibilize non-human into border studies. And I will say more about this project at the BRIT conference in May, where I will present the empirical section of our paper with Anne-Laure that is focusing on this relationship between whales and borders. And because we actually sought to apply this revised multi-perspectival approach that we presented to you today to the preliminary data that I collected for preparing Border Whale. So yes, I'm very much looking forward, even though it's bittersweet because I'm also living there in Niger, CBS, which is also a great environment for working on border studies.
Thank you very much, Luna. I'm really impressed by your planned activities, symposium, projects, publications, and so on. I look really forward to hearing more from you soon. Thank you again, Lula and Anne-Laure, for your talk today. Very inspiring talk, for the conclusions of this lecture series, and for the insights into your projects, into your current projects, your future projects. But I think we still have some time. Would you, Lola and Laure, would you like to say a few last words?
Well, thank you, Christian. This is luxurious. So, yes, I think we could wrap it up addressing the current situation. There's, in the context of the Anthropocene, raising new questions for border studies. I think if we really take seriously the idea of transforming our analysis of power relations, taking into account the non-human, we could really profoundly transform the field of border studies and geopolitics in general. And this is not only about intellectuals in their ivory tower framing new concepts. Trump, Putin, Xi Jinping are at this present moment brutally revealing that their quest of resources is challenging all the framing of geopolitics that we had since the end of the Second World War. However, their quest for resources does not equate a return to classical, realist international relations. At a moment when the limits of the planets are reached, what do borders mean? Who will respect them? Why should they? These are big questions. What does the analysis of non-human agency teach us? Non-human bordering processes may reveal very important very soon for scholars, yes, for policymakers too, and for activists. I think borders have been taking an important part in the ordering of nature, thus participating in the process of partaking nature and culture, as we mentioned earlier on today. This is not only a phenomenon of the modern past. One needs only needs to think how illegalized migrants are today pushed towards hostile terrain when crossing servile borders. In this case, we witness a naturalization of borders in this very tacit otherings. The other is reduced to the natural and to something that this natural, which would be dehumanizing this other. And therefore, working on non-human agency at borders also brings us back to the humankind. It's very, very powerful, and in the ways in which humans use borders as sites of dehumanization rather than protection. And I think it's also very interesting to not only think of the non-human as the good, positive, nice little animal, and the human as being the bad one who ruins it all, this beautiful blue planet that have been given in custody. But so it is by no means going back to this, and not to building another binary. But the idea is really to understand how we rethink ordering and othering in this new context.
Yes, and I think there are great words for finishing. I would just add something that, as we mentioned before, this work is that we initiated with the lecture series is far from over. It's evolving into a new project, collaboration, and research avenues. So if the theme is interesting, then you can reach out, and you can also stay tuned to what we will do. So through websites, both in our website, both in Luxembourg and Grenoble, and on LinkedIn. And also, yes, if, for instance, contributing with to the edited book is something that would interest you, do not hesitate to write us an email. Thank you so much for listening and being there.
Okay, thank you, Lola and Laure. Thank you for these last words. I think we should come to an end, and I will take the opportunity to announce that in the autumn 2025, the UNIGR Center for Border Studies will organize the next edition of Border Realities. And here again, interested border scholars from all over the world are invited to participate and to participate online, to follow. And the topic of the next edition has not yet been decided. It's still open, but please subscribe to our newsletter, to the newsletter of the UNIGR Center for Border Studies, to be kept informed. And now I would like to say goodbye and thank you. for your interest and for your attention, and see you soon for the next Border Realities lecture series.